Okay. Hello, everybody. We are beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 25. And we have been focusing on page 50. And here we have a discussion of dynamic energy related to the cardinal cross and also magnetic energy. We only got as far as dynamic energy. And we discussed electric fire in relation to the star, or sometimes considered a constellation Sirius, how it traveled through the zodiacal constellations Cancer and Capricorn, and expressed through Saturn. This is found particularly in the life of aspirants and probationary disciples. Later in the book, it describes this particular setup in relation to that group. But it works through the fifth, almost liberated hierarchy, which has such a commanding relationship with the fifth manifested hierarchy of solar angels. It's involved in the Christ consciousness and awakening people to the Christ consciousness. Sirius is sometimes called the Cosmic Christ. It competes with Orion for that title, but with respect to Orion, it would be a larger expression of that Christ principle. Then we talk about the Great Bear. It is expressing through the constellations Aries and Libra. It's the planet involved is really Vulcan, but it's the sun veiling Vulcan, and we're dealing with the 11th or unknown, another unknown creative hierarchy. One here, 11 is the number up and 2 is the number down. And unity through effort, we talked about the cosmic astral plane and the task of our particular solar logos in transiting from the fourth sublevel of the cosmic astral plane to the fifth, where Venus has established itself, now working on the sixth. Then we talked about also the Pleiades, perhaps the seven major Pleiades working through Gemini and Sagittarius, whereas the Great Bear stream works for those who are initiates, and the Sirius stream works upon probationary disciples and aspirants. The Pleiades works upon disciples per se, as we find out later in the book. And interestingly enough, two signs very much involved in the individualization process, Gemini and Sagittarius, are involved, as well as Mercury, the planet of mind, and one of the major planets of discipleship. Accept the discipleship, particularly along with Saturn. And there, the fourth creative hierarchy, we're dealing with the liberated hierarchies. That is the hierarchy of, in which is expressed the desire for duality, and we related this fourth creative hierarchy on the sixth sublevel of the cosmic astral plane to the sixth manifested creative hierarchy on the sixth level of the cosmic physical plane. And we talked about the struggle involved with desire. So we are, I think the important thing to realize is that we are receiving inspiration from cosmic astral sources. And even though the energy seems to come from the cosmic physical plane, for instance, in the first case through Capricorn, that would be our fifth manifested creative hierarchy. In the second case through Libra, that would be our third manifested creative hierarchy. In the fourth case through the solar lunar lords, which would be the sixth manifested creative hierarchy, even though the energy we are receiving in this way seems to come from those particular sources, really another source and higher source of inspiration connected to these sources on the cosmic physical plane are the hierarchical sources on the cosmic astral plane. Of course, you know, this has to remain in the realm of the conceptual, in the realm of the speculative, because as Master DK himself said, and he is the one who's given us all this information, that he does not know what is to be found on the cosmic astral plane because he has not, quote-unquote, been there. Although we can imagine that the Christ, who is Neptune, in a way, has come in close relation to the cosmic astral plane. He did receive a cosmic touch, perhaps at the sixth initiation, just the way the Buddha received a cosmic touch from the cosmic mental plane. So those two great teachers know something firsthand of what that energy is that is coming from those two higher cosmic planes. Now we move on to here to the discussion of magnetic energy. It says, all the above energies are called into play as far as man is concerned during the major initiations upon the path of initiation. We're dealing there with what DK calls the three superior constellations. He often lists them in the order of Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, although here they're listed in the order Sirius, Great Bear, and Pleiades, and that is not insignificant. But we did discuss the idea in the last webinar that the major initiation should be counted from the third initiation, even though quite often they seem to number from our very first initiations. They're called, even the birth of the Christ initiation is called major. But when we're dealing with the three superior constellations, since DK told us that the energy from Sirius does not even become recognized until the third degree, we should consider major initiations as beginning with the third. So that was dynamic energy. It relates to electric fire. It relates to the will aspect. So those three great constellations have much to do with the monad in man. But now we're dealing with magnetic energy and with solar fire. And these are the seven solar systems about which we have spoken quite a bit, because we did refer to this particular page in another context. The seven solar systems, of which ours is one, travel through the constellations Taurus and Scorpio. And the non-sacred planet Mars is the planetary outlet for these energy, and that has a lot to do with the desire nature and also with the sacral nature. We could question the seven solar systems of which ours is one. They seem to be a constellation within the one about whom naught may be said, just the way these other constellations, let's call Sirius a constellation, the Great Bear and the Pleiades, they are all constellations within the one about whom naught may be said. So I don't think that we should be considering the seven solar systems as including seven constellations. I think they should be considered including seven systems, seven major stars, each one of them with one major star. Otherwise, within the seven solar systems, the Great Bear would be included, and also the Pleiades would be included, because they are constellations within the one about whom naught may be said. And Sirius, too, would be included. So I think it's far more likely that the seven solar systems are indeed solar systems. Okay, and they travel through magnetically Taurus and Mars, very involved with sacral expression, and through Mars, which may well be the sacral center of the solar logos, and they work through the third creative hierarchy. It's also a liberated hierarchy, and it's called light. Okay, hopefully we are having a good expression here. Every once in a while this degraded audio sign comes on. Hopefully it is not operative. Its energy is that of light through knowledge. Taurus is definitely associated with the light. It's the mother of illumination. Mars is associated with the fifth ray. It rules the five senses in a way, and it rules the lower concrete scientific mind. It does have a fifth ray component, even though it demonstrates very much on the first and sixth rays in an outer expression. So, light through knowledge, and it would make sense that this is connected with the sacral center, because when the sacral center is properly released, toward the higher center, the throat center, and also the brow center, then the light does break forth. So there's a question here of controlling the sacral energy. There's a great deal of magnetic power that operates through the sacral energy. We cannot necessarily dismiss the idea that the seven solar systems are related to the solar plexus. It would seem they could be. That has yet to be decided. But the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, are together, I believe, a major center within the one about whom not to be said. This is a being, sometimes called the unknown, who has constellations for his centers, constellations. And so which it is, that remains to be seen, but there's the whole question of the light breaking forth, light through knowledge, and that seems to involve a sacral throat relationship, Scorpio and Taurus representing respectively the sacral and the throat, and Mars representing the sacral on its way to Venus, which represents the light. Mars rules Scorpio, Venus rules Taurus, Venus a great source of illumination, Mars and Scorpio both having a sacral relationship. So light through knowledge, light through knowledge is the key here. The ray is five, and we understand the light that can break forth under the fifth ray. The number down is three as well. Three and five both are mental numbers, mental rays. Okay. Well, let's see what else is said here. This is not dynamic energy. This is the energy related to solar fire. And it tells us how this energy stimulates those hierarchies which are in a liberated condition on the cosmic astral plane. We are told that all the above energy is called into play as far as man is concerned whilst he is training as a disciple on the path of discipleship. So the Taurus-Scorpio relationship is particularly potent on the path of discipleship, and we know that Scorpio is the major sign of discipleship, and the struggles that Mars brings are always found on the path of discipleship, and that the light breaking forth, the blinding light on the fixed cross, is related to the transition from the path of discipleship into the path of initiation. But Taurus is a very important sign on the path of discipleship because it gives the highest measure of aspirational idealism, and this is what a disciple does need. So we've had now eight constellations involved. With Sirius, we have Cancer Capricorn. With the Great Bear, we have Aries Libra. With the Pleiades, we have Gemini Sagittarius. And with the seven solar systems, we have Taurus and Scorpio. So we don't have Aquarius, we don't have Leo Aquarius, and we don't have Virgo Pisces. There is another liberated hierarchy, the very first, and we do not know which of the pairs of constellations. We can assume that it is a pair of constellations, one either Leo Aquarius or Virgo Pisces, that is related to this 12th creative hierarchy as it pours forth its energy. The 12th creative hierarchy is ruled by Pisces, so we might think that perhaps the Virgo-Pisces energy is related to it. There is a... It's called intelligent substance, and when we think of Virgo-Pisces, we can certainly think of the substantial nature of the sea of matter and of intelligence. Virgo, the sign of intelligence and of substance, and Pisces, the sign of substance. It is possible. And what the planet would be and how it would express, we are not given, so it's probably not too productive to speculate at this point. Would it be a continuation of magnetic energy, or would it be the energy of fire by friction, more substantial energy, the energy of matter, perhaps? All right, let us continue. Maybe we've made it off page 50, possibly. All right, no, we're on to page 51. All right. Before continuing with the analysis of the tabulations and showing the interrelations existing in this particular zodiacal cycle between the 12 signs of the zodiac and the 12 planets, meaning that perhaps in another zodiacal cycle the relationships might be different between the planets and the signs of the zodiac, there are certain things which I would like to point out here in connection with the zodiacal constellations. They are in the nature of generalizations, but the specific and the particular can be deduced from them. Okay. Yeah, everything is shifting, and when we talk about this particular zodiacal cycle, what do we mean? Is it a world period? Is it a kind of world period related to the solar logos and a solar system rather than to our particular planet? If so, it would be very long-lasting. Does the zodiacal cycle exist because the zodiac itself is a kind of wheel which in some way rotates? Would that make a zodiacal cycle? And if so, how long is this rotation? It would have to be extremely long, I suspect. Anyway, he tells us there is a zodiacal cycle, and it could also be a kind of a great age associated with our solar logos. Just as on the Earth we have great ages of one platonic year, or 25,000 years, so the so our solar system might have great ages as well. It might have a kind of our sun might have a kind of vernal equinox which rotates backwards in some direction. It takes 100,000 years approximately, DK told us, for the solar atom to make one complete revolution, and that revolution would be in a sense through the zodiac of constellations, and we might then divide that zodiac of constellations and its 100,000 year cycle by 12 and come up with 8,000 something each age lasting 8,000, but there might be other and longer cycles as well. So we're not in a position to understand that type of astrology, but we do realize that the chakric nature of all wheels is probably a fact in cosmic life. And just the way our sun revolves around the Pleiades, we can expect that there, in relation to the zodiacal wheel, there may be indeed a revolution. The stars are moving. The question is, do they move together? So some have speculated on this and come up with certain figures. These figures have to be confirmed. We're dealing with far-out speculations. After all, we have to learn how to get along on this planet. We have to harmonize the human race. We have to make it an acceptable and accepted part of the planetary evolutionary process. We have immediate tasks ahead of us. I think the thing that we can say is that there are zodiacal ages, precessional ages of approximately 2160 years. They do involve the change of energies. These energies are very real, and they are adapted. They will reach humanity as a whole and individuals. They have to be adapted to. They have to be rightly expressed. With these kinds of planetary movements, we can deal. We're entering a precessional age of Aquarius, and we're entering a great Platonic year of Aquarius. So the Aquarian energy is something with which we can come to grips. Whether there is a zodiacal axis that affects the entire solar system rather than just one of the planets within it, that's another question. I mean, we here are having an age of Aquarius Leo. On another planet, the age may be something different. The vernal axis may be pointing in quite a different direction. But within the solar system as a whole, what particular axis is our solar logos upon at this time? And that would be an overarching, overriding energy, superior even to the Aquarius Leo energy on Earth. But it would affect the solar system as a whole and probably would not be easily sensed by a human being, because the human being doesn't really know the vast history of the solar system, and solar systemic changes would be detected by cosmic beings like the planetary logoi rather than human beings. All right, so DK is going to make some generalizations, and he wants to point out something in relation to these zodiacal constellations. First, I would point out that the 12 planets governing the 12 houses, okay, these are divisions of space around the one who has been born in his particular location in space. I would point out that the 12 planets governing the 12 houses concern primarily the physical plane expression of the man. Primarily, but not exclusively. And when we mean physical plane expression, I suppose we mean systemic physical plane expression. But they do affect as well the astral and mental expression of the man. That is pretty obvious. And that is work within the physical body of the planetary logos or solar logos. The houses, they are related to the third aspect. Therefore, they affect potently the personality aspect, which is the third aspect. Their influence plus inherited karmic conditions produces those environing states and those circumstances which give opportunity for the development and eventually the control of the form side of life. So houses are very form-based. They concern the three lower worlds, and particularly DK seems to be saying they concern the very lowest world of physical circumstances. Therefore, they have much to do with karma, and we are placed in those conditions according to our karma. The karma is ruled by Saturn, and Saturn is that planet of the three synthesizing planets which does rule physical conditions. Saturn, in a way, rules the lower part of the systemic physical plane. From another perspective, it rules the entire systemic physical plane, and from another perspective, it rules the entire cosmic physical plane as the correspondence of the physical permanent atom of the cosmic physical plane. So these are the particular forms that surround us and which are determined by our karma. We inherit these. And the houses probably give some strong indication of the karmic circumstances which we will encounter and perhaps the outcome of those circumstances. So those are the 12 planets. Now we have, you know, we have seen how the planets can be related to the soul nature as well, and that each one of us is really a monad from a certain sacred planet, and therefore the planets have a monadic influence as well. So DK keeps on emphasizing different spheres of influence for these astrological factors, whether they are planets, zodiacal constellations, or the super constellations, the great constellations. All right, let's see what we have here. All right. Secondly, The 12 constellations, zodiacal constellations, are concerned primarily with the stimulation of the soul within the form. Now, earlier we learned that there was, in fact, a monadic stimulation, but here he is listing it in this way. Planets, personality, a zodiacal constellation, soul, and probably he will list the three great constellations as related to the monad. The 12 constellations are concerned primarily with the stimulation of the soul within the form, producing subjective activity, I suppose activity within the realm of consciousness, which in its turn causes changes in the outer expression through the fusion of the energy of the constellation with the energy of the planets. So he's not dichotomizing here. He's not drawing a line between zodiacal and planetary function. He's talking about the soul-infused personality as registering two types of energy, zodiacal and planetary. Anyway, there are places in the book where DK tells us the zodiacal constellations represent the centers below the diaphragm. And then here, the zodiacal constellations represent the soul. And then also the zodiacal constellations are related to the monad. Let us see if we can find that one. I did talk about it earlier, zodiac and monad. You know, there's one. The succession of the greater rounds of the zodiac are a period of approximately 250,000 years. That's related to the monad, but that's not what we're looking for. So let's try zodiacal and monad, and there are five. Zodiacal energies pass through Shambhala and are related to the first ray of willpower and affect the monad. See what I mean? So zodiacal energies affect the soul. Zodiacal energies are found affecting the centers below the diaphragm. Zodiacal energies are found also affecting the monad. Let's see if there's anything else here. I believe the descent and reascent of the monad or soul cannot be discovered from zodiacal science. Okay, that is HPB speaking. Okay. Well, anyway, I did find the particular reference I was looking for, and it is this one. Zodiacal energies pass through Shambhala and are related to the first ray of willpower and affect the monad. So now we have seen that DK emphasizes different relationships in different places in the book, but in this particular case, planets in relation to the personality and zodiacal energies in relation to the soul, producing the subjective changes which work out as changes in activity and outer expression. And he's telling us that the union of zodiac and planet are very important, and in astrology we consider them to be such. But when we interpret a planet in a sign, I'm not sure how effectively we say, okay, zodiacal energy here represents the subjectivity, and it merges with the planet, which represents activity in the field of circumstance, and how well we interpret it from that particular point of view, whether we put the zodiac in relation to consciousness and the planet in relation to activity. Probably we should not dichotomize too thoroughly. There are ways in which the planet will represent consciousness as well, and the zodiac certain types of activity. And, you know, so a lot of familiarity with this book is needed so that we don't lock onto one statement as if it were not perhaps modified, amplified, or contradicted even in another place, apparently contradicted. With Master DK, I never say contradicted. I will always say apparently contradicted, because it is my own limitation of thought which makes the contradiction appear. Thus it is apparent. Okay. So we're talking about the fusion of the energy of the constellation with the energy of the planets. The effect produced of this fusion falls into two stages. What are these stages? Okay, stage number one, the stage, first stage, wherein the sun dominates the man and he is gradually fitted to respond to the soul according to his sun sign energy. His latent possibilities for this life are unfolded. We are trying to bring latency out into presence. We are trying to bring that which is hidden into expression, that which is undeveloped into development. The effect of the sun sign is sometimes called, this is so important, the potency of the sun of probability. We're talking now about the fusion of zodiacal and planetary indicators. And for most people, they will be under the sun. The sun will dominate. It is, what shall we say, probable that the sun will dominate. However, it is still a spiritual domination, because under this domination, the man is being fitted to respond to the soul. Well, when the sun sign and the rising sign are in a tense or apparently incompatible relationship, you wonder how that fitting can occur. Sometimes it might occur more easily when there is harmony between the sun sign and the rising sign, but in any case, under your sun sign, you are being prepared to respond to the soul. And so we have to ask ourselves, how is it that my rising sign or my sun sign has trained me, fit me to respond to the soul? And each will have to have his own answer on that. But looking over a life over many years, perhaps one can see those energies of the sun sign, how we have responded to them, and how they have moved us closer to the spiritual position. Anyway, this very important statement, the potency of the sun of probability, are you doing the probable? Are you involved with the probable at this point, or are you involved with the possible? Are you an individual that is responding mostly to your sun sign? How can you somewhat objectively assess that? Or are you really responding more to your rising sign, or to some mixture between them, and what is the balance of the mixture, if it exists? Obviously, we want to respond in such a way that the rising sign is the main influence upon our consciousness and our behavior, and we should sit back and see whether objectively we can determine which is the major factor. The potency of the sun of probability. So we're talking about the fusion of zodiacal and planetary energies. And the second phase, the second stage where we're in, there is an increasing response to the energies concealed by the rising sign. Now, why is that word concealed there? Of course, there are ray energies which every rising sign conveys, but perhaps there are deeper potentials in this rising sign which are not at all obvious. They're not the kind of thing we express in our normal life. And can we plumb the depths of our rising sign, perhaps consulting its esoteric and hierarchical ruler, to learn what potentials are there which may presently be concealed from us or not in the process of expression? And of course, this will take time. They evoke the unexpected. Well, the rising sign, in some ways, because it's so much connected with the physical body, evokes some very expected things in the beginning, but they are on a relatively low level compared with the whole gamut of possibilities embodied by the rising sign. So there are certain expectable behaviors from the rising sign, but there are hidden energies which are far more latent and less evident and rarely found in expression. Can we plumb the depths of our rising sign to find out its potentials that we might express that we have not yet expressed? They evoke the unexpected and produce the hastening. It's a driving energy, the driving energies of the rising sign. They produce a hastening of the evolutionary process and the unfoldment of the inner life. So question yourself, has my spiritual process been hastened to any degree? Has there been an unfoldment of my inner life when I have managed to follow some of the subtler, more concealed, more spiritual aspects of my rising sign? This you can meditate upon. In my own case, I meditate upon the sign Aries, sun sign, and the sign Cancer, rising sign, very different signs. And I try to see what is the balance between thinking and acting like an Aries person and thinking and acting like a Cancerian or some combination of the two. The rising sign is termed in the language of esotericism the sun of possibility. It's not necessarily probable what you'll do with those energies. You may not respond to the highest aspects of them, but they conceal possibilities which will hasten your spiritual progress and which will unfold your inner life. And everybody needs to detect these. If in astrology we do nothing else but determine the right kind of relationship between our sun sign and rising sign, we will have done something. And that's why it's so important for everybody to know what that rising sign is, because otherwise they're missing a major, major indicator, something that the solar angel has apparently arranged in terms of the time of birth, more or less, so that an energy can be used to drive the individual closer to the center of his life, of his spiritual life. So we've seen the planets are more outwardly indicative than are the zodiacal constellations, which are more subjective, having to do with consciousness. There is a union that takes place between them. There are phases of this union, and they occur, they unite in two major phases, one in which the sun sign is dominant and one in which the rising sign begins to be the dominant. The potency of the sun of probability, the sun sign, the sun of possibility, the rising sign. So memorize those two things, the potency of the sun of probability and the sun of possibility. The rising sign is a sun in a way. The triple sun in a way being the sun sign, the rising sign, and the point opposite the sun sign or the monadic point, the triple sun. And how do we respond to this triple sun? Can we respond to all aspects of it? Probably not completely yet. We're on page 52. Through the effect of the energy flowing from the zodiacal signs, from the constellations to the signs, the man is prepared for the crisis of orientation. Or we might almost call it a crisis of reorientation, because he does reorient himself. Or let's just say he learns to face the East, which is his true spiritual nature. The crisis of orientation, wherein he slowly and gradually reverses his mode of progress upon the wheel of life and begins consciously to travel back to his source. The energies, zodiacal energies, are no longer used in an extroverted, outgoing way exclusively. They are turned in upon the true subject, the soul, and help the man reface his soul and journey towards his soul. The symbolism of reversal is used to indicate different modes of responding to the zodiacal signs. When you respond in a desirous way, according to the desires of the personality, the consciousness is outwardly oriented, the consciousness is extroverted, the external environment is taken as reality, and the true subjective nature is not understood as the reality. But when there comes a different type of response, perhaps according to the esoteric ruler of the sign, then there is a reorientation of consciousness, a withdrawal of it from the outer circumstances. They are deemed to be less real and less desirable than hitherto thought, and consciousness is reoriented towards the subjective center. That is the reversal of the wheel. It is a change in sensitivity. It is a reorientation of consciousness. It may not be, strictly speaking, traveling on the wheel in a different direction. That may simply be a symbol. So this is symbolically, I believe, spoken. He then goes from Aries to Pisces via Taurus. This is the natural order of the signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc. He goes from Aries to Pisces via Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn. So the light of knowledge comes to him, increasing illumination. He fights that's in Taurus. He fights the struggles of discipleship in Scorpio and becomes the triumphant disciple, and is therefore prepared for initiation in Capricorn. So those signs are singled out for illumination, struggle and triumph, and then initiation. Instead of moving from Aries to Taurus via Sagittarius, Leo, and Cancer, these are interesting signs to be considered on the non-reversed wheel. In this case, Sagittarius focuses his personality desire. Leo gives him a very strong sense of himself. He becomes a dominant self. And then in Cancer, he establishes a grip upon his environment and clings to it. The ego clings to that body of Cancer. But on the other hand, as the Buddhists tell us, our major problem is clinging to non-reality. And when you are thinking of yourself as an ego, I am this or I am that, you do cling. And so Cancer has something to do with attachment to the environment. The triplicity of constellations mentioned in these two great routes around the zodiac have a definite and momentous effect and are called paramount signs of influence. So, okay, let's keep this in mind. The paramount signs of influence on the reverse wheel are Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn, and on the non-reverse wheel, Sagittarius, Leo, and Cancer. Let's just say when desire is rampant, and let food again, let food be sought, and when the one-pointed desire nature seeks to acquire from the circumstance that which is seen as desirable, that which is envisioned, and when that happens under Sagittarius, a man is deeply immersed. When he is a lower ego, he's deeply immersed and far from liberation. He sees his ego as reality, which is a mistake. And when he's under the influence of the sign Cancer, he is attached, he is clinging, he is very much under the influence of the four lunar lords. So these are paramount signs of influence. There's always something that's paramount. And I think we can somehow find in the book always that signs will be emphasized as paramount here or there. During this process, either of going, responding to the signs as a growing consciousness or responding to the signs as an outgoing personality, during the process, the mental principle, the discriminating mind, is developed. Through the cross of many changes, the mutable cross. Finally, a man learns not to be the victim and learns that he has a thinking principle and learns that he can order and correlate his environment for more effective living. during this process, the mental principle, the discriminating mind, is developed, and in this specific connotation, not in a general connection, when we're developing the mental principle, he's giving us great generalities here. The emphasis is laid upon the influence of Aries, Libra, Aries, Gemini, and Libra. Well, Aries is esoterically ruled by Mercury. Gemini is exoterically ruled by Mercury. Libra comes under the third ray. We're dealing here with various types of rulers, Mercury and Saturn. Primarily, Libra is very connected with Saturn and also with Venus and Uranus, all of them mental planets. Everything here, every planet connected with Aries, Gemini, and Libra has a strong mental component. Aries, Mars, which rules the five senses, the sensorium, and also the concrete science. Gemini is ruled by Mercury, a mental planet. Venus, the planet of the fifth ray, strongly mental. Earth, the field on which all of this must occur, a third ray planet, temporarily until its second ray soul takes over. Libra, ruled by fifth ray Venus again, and then by Uranus, which rules a scientific mind and eventually a cult mind, and finally Saturn, a third ray planet. So when we're dealing about developing the mental principle, Aries, Gemini, and Libra are considered very important. Under that influence, the man learns to overcome desire. That's what the mental principle does, through experiment. That's Uranus, isn't it? With an experience of every kind of desire and selfish impulse. Mars will certainly give desire and selfish impulse. Mars, desire and selfish impulse. And Mercury, Venus, Uranus, and Saturn will provide the learning. Okay. Mercury. Thus gradually and with infinite pain. Well, okay, what is infinite? You know, I'm quite particular about the use of the word infinite, even though maybe I don't even know how it should be used, but let's just say with a great deal of pain. Thus gradually and with infinite pain, the human soul, that part of the monadic awareness immersed in the four elements in the four lunar vehicles, the human soul learns to function first as a member of the human family. And this is done when the love petals are opening up. These are the socially conscious petals. First, as a member of the human family, and second, as a spiritual entity, the divine soul, which is the consciousness on the higher mental plane and on the plane of the spiritual triad. Okay. Let's see how we're doing here. Right. You will see from the above that certain positions taken by the esoteric astrologer reverse the position of orthodox astrology of today. Well, the rising sign, of course, is one of the major reversals, isn't it? I remember when I studied ordinary astrology, the rising sign was considered to be the mask, and the sun sign was considered to be the real individual. And this precisely gives the wrong emphasis. Later astrologers like Dane Rudyard came in and emphasized the specificity of the rising sign and how much it had to do with one's true identity. And this was this was in the proper direction. The reason for this, this reversal of the position of orthodox astrology, is that in the descent of ideas from the plane of ideas, they become reversed upon the astral plane. We sometimes call this the astral reversal. And what it means is that which is desirable appears undesirable, and that which is undesirable appears desirable. Let's see here. They become something. I've just erased that. What do they become? Ah, yes. They become reversed upon the astral plane and subject to the great illusion. Astrology must eventually free itself from this reversal. And how to do that? Pay attention to the astrology of the soul. Pay attention to oneself as a soul. And then instead of pursuing personal astrology all the time and asking what's going to happen to me, and you have a false and illusory me when you're asking that question, we will begin to wonder what's going to happen to a different type of me, a me that is a soul, that's part of a soul group, that's part of an ashram, that's really an expression of the planetary life. It's a different sort of me altogether. Remember, at one point on the second ray, it says, "Naught is but me," but it's a capital me, and it means that I am identified with all forms of life. It's a very different kind of me than this little old me that is this tiny, definite, egoistic me in which we have sort of frozen our consciousness as we look at our normal responses and we think that this precisely is what I am, which is a great illusion. From another point of view, of course, the great illusion is the entire universe, at least That's what Mahayana Buddhism seems to say. But we are talking about misunderstanding things through an astral reversal, whereby desire for undesirables becomes paramount, and the Buddha came to correct the desire for undesirables. He wanted us, you know, you can't really get rid of desire entirely. Even the planetary logos or solar logos has desire, but let there be at least desire for desirables, and this we call aspiration. This whole question of will and desire is a profound one. A right understanding of the effect of the various energies and forces will make it apparent that, right understanding, okay, will make it apparent that when the conditioning planetary forces, okay, conditions, outer conditions, this is a beautiful summary, conditioning planetary forces, the expanding energies of the sun sign, oh, this is so good, and the driving energy, notice that's a singular in this case, driving energy of the rising sign, why does he call them expanding energies? Because we have planetary forces, we have the energies of the sun sign, plural, and then we have the driving energy of the rising sign. Well, even the rising sign has a few energies in it, you know, ray energies and other ruling planet energies. The driving energy of the rising sign are all being controlled and directed by the illumined spiritual man, which must mean that we are focused at least on the higher mental plane and maybe beyond. You will then have a soul upon the very verge of liberation. Well, this is so important. You know, what a wonderful paragraph this is. A right understanding of the effect of the various energies and forces will make it apparent that when the conditioning planetary forces, having everything to do with your immediate circumstances and your reaction to them in a quite physical sense, the expanding energies of the rising sign, wherein you grow towards your spiritual life, even though you are still very much personal, you're at least growing towards response to spiritual influences, and the driving energies of the rising sign, driving forward to the center of your life, closer to your soul nature and towards the objective which the soul sees for you, closer to the jewel in the lotus, as it were, closer to focusing your consciousness within the causal body, all are being controlled and directed by the illumined spiritual man, and let us say responsive to the spiritual triad, because we want to be above even the soul nature. You have then a soul upon the very verge of liberation, meaning the very verge of liberation, almost to the fourth degree. Eventually, the energies of the 12 constellations, and at the final stage of experience and development of the three great constellations, which we just looked at on page 50, namely Sirius, the Great Bear, and the Pleiades, which condition the solar logos, so these great constellations, certainly Sirius does, we know the Great Bear does too, and the Pleiades, absolutely, we revolve around the Pleiades, so these three great constellations do condition the solar logos. When the energies of the 12 constellations and the final stage of experience and development of the three great constellations, which condition the solar logos, are blended with the innate energy of the seven rays or of the planetary logoi, this marks a point of perfection. So we have a lineup between three great energies and which are of the superior constellations, and the zodiacal energies and the planetary energies, a great alignment. The seven rays and planetary alignment. This marks the point of perfection. Okay. Perfection related to the number four and to the fourth initiation. And in the life of the fourth degree initiate, we need necessarily a connection between the superior constellations, zodiacal constellations, and the planetary and the planetary energies. Okay, let's see where we are here. Well, we're getting quite close, getting quite close. Okay, so we are looking at perfection in terms of the alignment of the dynamic energies, the magnetic energies, and I suppose we would say the energies which represent fire by friction, which are the planetary energies. This marks a point of perfection. These extraneous energies, extraneous to our solar system, I refer here to those of the major constellations, are relayed to the Earth via the seven sacred planets and the five non-sacred planets. So connected with the constellations, connected with the planets, with the constellations, or let's call them the superior constellations, are the 12 planets. And they are conduits for the major constellations and also conduits for the zodiacal constellations. And when there is the complete fusion, that always marks the point of achievement, when there is the complete fusion of the related energies and therefore full expression, a world period comes to an end. Well, this is far beyond the consummation that we call liberation in the life of man. This is the end. You know, a world period is an ambiguous term. The complete fusion of all sacred and non-sacred planets with the 12 zodiacal energies and with the three superior constellations. This is a solar systemic climax, and maybe even is a climax in the seven solar systems of which ours is one. What is a world period in this particular context? It says, on top of it, a great world period comes to an end. So is he talking about a Maha Manvantara? Is this a Maha? Maha Manvantara. Is, in other words, at the end of a Maha Manvantara, are all of these things achieved? Or is it a still greater period? Because to create a perfected adjustment between all the 12 planets that we now have and the 12 zodiacal constellations and the three great super constellations, this may require even more than a Maha Manvantara. So as I say, the term world period is ambiguous, and he's able to give us the sense of a cycle without telling us which one it is. I mean, from a certain point of view, a world period could be a 25,000-year Platonic cycle, a great Platonic year. A world period can be one complete revolution of our sun around the Pleiades. A world period can be even something greater than that, because that's 250,000 years. It can be even a Maha Manvantara, or maybe a series. How many Maha Manvantaras do we have when we combine all of the great Mahakalpas through which a Soto Logos has evolved? We have six or maybe seven Maha Manvantaras. Is that a world period? Anyway, a great world period comes to an end. And for a long time, during this cycle of incarnations, the human being is conditioned almost entirely by the activity of the non-sacred planets. I would say until the fifth petal of the egoic lotus is unfolded at the first initiation or thereabouts, the activity of the non-sacred planets is paramount. And if there is activity of other planets, they operate or are appropriated in a non-sacred manner. All right, I think we are, yes, we certainly are at that point. Oh my goodness, just time for the great invocation. It's already 1 hour. So let us sound together the great invocation from the point of light within. Okay, here we go. Oh. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. Make Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we are there. We have completed EAA number 25, and we are on some page or other here. Oh, what are we on? Page 53, something like that. Let us, I'll call it for the moment page 53. Yes, it is page 53. We are on page 53, EAA, ending page 53. And we will begin with EAA, Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 26, just at the point where we are going to be defining the nature of the non-sacred planets. As you can see, once we left the cosmic fire material, well, it can flow with greater ease. That was very difficult cosmic fire material, dealing with matters which are far beyond our ken, but we can speculate and think into them together. Okay, so farewell and see you soon.